Welcome to Who Are You, a CSI podcast. I am Raven, and I've seen CSI through around 3 to 4 times.
And I'm Nick, and these are my first time experiencing these episodes.
And today we are reviewing season 3, episode 20, Last Laugh. Original air date is April 24, 2003. Director is Richard J. Lewis. Writers are Anthony E. Zeiker, Bob Harris, and Carol Mendelson. And we begin today's episode with shots of the Vegas Strip before we enter a comedy club. So, Nick, what is our Vegas score for today's episode?
Pretty low in the Vegas score. We got a 24.
Okay.
We have like three scenes.
So, like halfway, 50-ish percent.
Well, yeah, the ceiling is kind of low. So, like the most of the score comes from this very opening scene. We got three shots here. It goes for about 9 seconds. There is only one other shot of the Vegas Strip. The entire rest of the episode comes at minute 21. And we get this little 3 second shot, and it's kind of in the distance, but it counts. So yeah, pretty low Vegas score, especially for this season where we've been maxing it out and having, you know, 7, 8, 9 shots during the episode. So they had, I guess, plenty of fill elsewhere in the episode to use.
Yeah.
It was good.
It was good. So we go to this comedy club. There is a comedian up on stage. He is bombing. And so, I believe.
Like, before you even see this comedian's face,
you hear his voice.
A very iconic comedian voice. And my partner, I immediately was like, that's Bobcat Goldthwait. She's like, no, it's not. And I was like, yes, it is. And I went and watched a clip of Bobcat. And be like, and it wasn't as egregious as his like stage performance, but it clearly was. But yeah, that's the first. We're gonna go fast and furious, I think, with Spot the Guest Stars this episode.
We are, and so I don't want to spend too much time here because I don't want to be editing this for like 9 hours on Sunday morning when I normally edit. But this is my, I'm counting it as a Spot the Guest Star, but it was almost a fake Spot the Guest Star because it was his voice, right? I was like, it wasn't really. But then when I was looking at him, I was like, did he voice the guy from The Labyrinth? Like the one that leads?
Oh, Iago?
No. That's Gilbert Godfrey. We'll get to Iago.
Oh, right. Yeah. Who also is appearing in this episode.
Who's also appearing in this episode. Spoiler alert. We have another Spot the Guest Star soon with Gilbert Godfrey. No. Then, so I went on his IMDb. I'm like, is he the one from The Labyrinth? And The Labyrinth. And I went and I was like, okay, no. But he voices Pain in Hercules.
Oh, okay.
And I was like, yes. Like, right after I read that, that's all I could see in my head for the rest of the episode anytime that he spoke. So we have this Spot the Guest Star. And then we're switching between him being on stage, like bombing his set, and another comedian prepping to go on stage. And this is our second Spot the Guest Star. So this is Jeffrey Ross. He plays Dougie Max in this episode. And yeah, I don't think I know him
from anything other than being Jeffrey Ross.
Yes.
Yeah.
I just know him from being Jeffrey Ross.
Yeah. His real claim to fame is like Comedy Central roasts.
Yeah.
All the Comedy Central roasts of the 2000s. Jeffrey Ross, big part of that. Was just involved, I think, in the Tom Brady roast as well.
Okay.
But yeah, very well known for as a roast. He's a big stand-up comic.
Yeah. So
I'm sure he's been in things.
Not too many. When you go on his IMDb, he's not. One of his main credits is the CSI episode.
There you go.
So just a heads up. So we're flipping between Dougie Max and the comedian that we learn later on is Michael Borland on stage. And we realized at first, it's been so long since I'd seen this episode, I thought that Dougie Max was peeing.
Yes.
Because he's standing in this weird way and they're hiding his like lower half. And I was like, oh, he's like peeing outside before he goes in, whatever. No, he's getting a blowjob. So.
Yeah, I thought he was just listening in on the set, making fun of the guy for a while or something.
Yeah. No, and I only mention this. I don't mention this to be vulgar. I mention this because it comes up multiple times in the episode. It's the only reason I'm pointing out that it's happening. So then we learn that the gentleman outside is the headliner. He is Dougie Max. And he does, you know, a little bit of his spiel. Then we're back at the comedy club, but now Jim Brass, Grissom, and Catherine are there because Dougie did. Dougie Dougie died. David's up on stage with him. We have a few David scenes in this episode. So David is up on stage with him.
We had a mini site of one of our other Spot the Guest Stars.
It's coming up.
He was in the crowd during the Dougie set.
Oh, was he in the crowd?
Okay. Yeah, during Dougie's set. That's when I first noticed him. So Gilbert Godfrey.
Okay, I noticed him in the next scene.
But he comes in many times this episode.
So speaking of Aladdin and Iago, that is definitely, I mean, I watched Aladdin, I don't know how many times growing up. It was one of those, like, we had it on VHS. I can't even tell you how many times that we watched Aladdin growing up. So that is, I know him from other things.
What's the movie with the kid? He's like the principal.
You're bringing me back to working at Suncoast Movies. What's that movie with, like, there's like two people on the cover and... Look Who's Talking To?
No.
Because he's
in
Look Who's Talking To as I look at his IMDb.
Problem Child is the movie I'm thinking of.
Mm.
Problem Child. That's a great early 90s movie. But yeah, that's, I think, will forever be burned in my brain, Gilbert Gottfried's voice from that movie.
That's fair. So we, as they're up on the stage investigating the victim, there's no overt evidence of an OD. They're postulating what has happened to him. We go to credits. The body, this is when I spotted Gilbert Godfrey for the first time. They roll the body out and they roll it like right past him. So it's like, if you missed him in the audience, AKA me, they put him on main display right here. We then have Jim Brasso, the owner of the comedy club, and he's talking about how, you know, Dougie used to be like a regular performer, you know, at the comedy club, and then he made it big and now he has a TV show. And so the owner pays him like once a year just to like come and like pay homage and bring, you know, customers in. The bartender walks over and he's like, oh, well, maybe you can like give me, you know, some time on stage. And this is yet another.
Oh, good.
Spot the guest star.
This is a half Spot the Guest Star for me. I know this guy.
Okay.
And I don't know what I know him from. If it's other stuff, although you tell your bit and then I'll give a nugget that I found on IMDb that I was like, I can't possibly remember him from that.
Okay. So what I remember him from is he's in The Hangover. I think I also I generally just know him as a comedian.
Yeah. And I think he's just in stuff more often than you think.
I think he has the credit of like bartender or waiter in so many movies. Like so many movies. Yeah. He is a bartender or a waiter or something of that nature. But he's Eddie in The Hangover, which is where I generally know him from. But I also think I know him from The Goldbergs.
Okay. I've never watched that show.
I've seen like 5 to 10 episodes, if not more, of The Goldbergs, and he's in 42 episodes. So I also think that I do recognize him from that as well.
So there's an old NBC comedy called News Radio.
News Radio.
Phil Hartman and unfortunately Joe Rogan.
Oh.
And he's Joe Rogan's brother. And there's a whole episode of Joe Rogan and his brothers. And I've probably seen that episode 2 or 3 times.
Yeah.
Enough that I remembered the episode, but I was like, I don't really remember him as Joe Rogan's brother, do I?
Yeah.
But yeah, I was like, I'm glad you had hit him because I saw like he's been in stuff, but I was like, nothing really ticks enough bells for me to count that.
Yeah.
So I joked that I had half a Spot the Guest Star earlier and that was it.
So he's out for some time on stage, and then the owner keeps talking. He's just saying like, hey, Dougie was a hack. Like, he just happened to make it big, but he was a hack. And like, hey, here's a wall full of suspects. And he points to like a wall of other comedians. He's like, any of them would have wanted his spot and would have wanted, you know, to take him down. Catherine is then in the green room. There's a tray of snacks, but also cocaine. So she
makes like a weird China, like Chinatown.
Well, China White, I think, is how it can be referenced. Me as a non-drug person, I have ADHD. I don't need cocaine. I don't need to be more up than I already
am. Full-time.
Full-time up. It's exhausting. So we then have Grissom. He's still on stage, and he's making commentary that there's 6 bottles of Anoka water up on the stage.
Yep.
That's his entire scene. We're back with Catherine. She's with the owner. She wants to know who had access to the green room. Essentially, everybody. Like, it's only supposed to be like certain people, but essentially everybody has access to it. But they walk up to a lineup of like the comedians there that were there that night. The bartender, a female bartender waitress. I don't know if we quite ever find out quite like what her job is there. But so Catherine's kind of going down the line. She's looking in their wallets. And then the female bartender, who was the one giving.
Yes, I was like, she provides miscellaneous services to the club.
She provides miscellaneous services. Has cocaine on one of her credit cards. So Jim Brass leads her out in cuffs. And as she's being put in the car, he looks across the street. He sees a guy stepping out of a sports car. And this is another.
Yes.
Spot the guest star. So this is Jeff Perry. Where do you know Jeff Perry from? Because I feel like
I
don't think we're going to have the same place that we know him from.
So I feel like I wasn't sure where I knew Jeff Perry from. And I think at some level, I do know him from Nash Bridges, which is probably the thing he's in a lot. But I also am 90% certain I definitely know him as the lawyer from Wild Things, which is
Bryce Hunter. That's that's the name of the character in Wild Things. I'm just looking at his IMDb. I actually know him as Thatcher Gray from Grey's Anatomy. He plays Meredith Grey's dad.
Oh, wow.
In Grey's Anatomy, and that's how I know him.
His voice is like so, it was like so later on. At first I saw him in that scene. You only see him for a bit. I was like, wait, I know who that guy is. And I was like, okay, he's probably gonna be in the episode again. So I waited, and then he's in the episode, and I'm like, I know this voice, I know this guy. Why do I know this guy so well? And I'm looking at his IMDb, and I was like, did I watch episodes of Nash Bridges? Were they just on? I don't remember. But I knew this actor.
He's also in 124 episodes of Scandal. So I've never seen Scandal. But if you've watched Scandal, I would imagine you would recognize him because he's in 124 episodes of Scandal. So that is another spot for guest star. We'll come back to him, though. We're then back at HQ. Grissom is with Doc Robbins. We learn, I didn't get the exact phrasing of the cause of death, but essentially it is like what you would expect to find in someone who dies of a heart attack, but he doesn't have any of the other signs of having a heart attack. Like, there's no blockages, and he seems like a healthy individual other than the fact that he is dead.
Sudden cardiac arrest, basically.
Yes. But we do learn that his tox results came back, and he was positive for cocaine.
But a very tiny amount.
Just a little. Well, I don't know if they know this at this. They don't know this at this point. They just know that it's positive for cocaine.
They haven't seen the number yet. This is not the scene with the number.
This is not that scene. So we'll get there. Catherine is in an interrogation with the female bartender and her lawyer, and the bartender saying like, "Look, Dougie was in a program. Like he's not using coke, but he enjoys a little humming coke before a show."
Which I appreciate the joke there. Yeah. I don't think it exists outside of the context of this episode.
I don't think so. I didn't look. I did not look. So, and Catherine's like, well, you know that it's a numbing agent, right? Like it's not working the way that, and the bartender's like, no, like that's the point. The goal wasn't to pop the cork. It was to shake the bottle and get him frustrated essentially before he went on stage. So the whole point was that he wanted it numbed out. So the blowjob didn't come to completion. But she seems to have some level of affection for him because she's like defending him and saying like, look, like he wasn't on coke, like he's in a program, like he's doing well. Like
they seem to know each other.
Yeah, I mean, yes, they know each other very intimately in certain ways, but that doesn't necessarily mean that, you know. We then essentially really get around to storyline B, where Jim Brass approaches Nick and he needs help. So a few weeks ago in Green Valley, a woman in her 40s slipped and died. Jim Brass thought that it was an accident. He didn't call CSIs on scene. But now, after seeing the husband, aka our spot the guest star last night, he is not so sure. He's especially not so sure because he called the life insurance carrier and the husband called the morning that the wife died and was like, where's my money? So Jim Brass is like,
Where's my $750,000 or something?
$750,000 in life insurance. So Nick is like, I'm not sure if I should really be the one that's helping you. Like, maybe you want Grissom. So Jim Brass reassures Nick that, no. I think I need, I want your help over Grissom's help. Because this is not up Grissom's alley, because it's a hunch. And Grissom isn't interested in hunches. So I want you to be the one to help me out. Which is fair. Like, that is a true thing about Grissom. He likes black and white, and he likes his facts. And, you know, he doesn't want to go on gut feelings.
Still a little behind his back, but...
A little bit, but...
I feel like they have a good enough relationship. Man,
evidently, Nick wasn't doing anything else, so...
Yeah. And he must find out at some point, because...
He must, because then Sarah gets pulled into it, yep. So...
And then later on, he's like, Warwick, you're the only person I have.
Right, so at some point, Grissom gave the A-okay on this one. We go to a Grissom and Catherine walk and talk, and they're having a conversation about how much cocaine can end up in someone's system via the penis. And Catherine's saying there's no way that he OD'd because of this. Like, there's no way that the cocaine that is in his system because of the blowjob is why he died. And Grissom just keeps saying, like, well, cite your source. Like, yeah. What source do you have that this isn't possible? And she's like, what are you talking? I thought it was like a funny, like...
It seemed like the end she was really just saying, like, I'm using common sense.
So we learn that it wasn't I think this is the scene that we learn that it wasn't, like, he did, it was not enough.
Yeah, they're walking to
Greg Sanders, and Greg Sanders office, was like, yeah, he only had like X amount, and it was like very low, which is like what Catherine was expecting. Instead, he was poisoned with a migraine medication that is what caused his untimely
neo
demise.
Something
Naropriptamine?
Yeah.
Naropriptamine? Something like that. We then have Sarah and Nick. See, Sarah gets pulled into this. Looking over the files from the case that Jim Brass asked Nick to help with. And we learn that Doc Robbins oversaw an abbreviated autopsy on the case. And after some back and forth, Sarah's like, well, you want to go to the bathroom? Like,
yep.
AKA the scene. Right. So before we go there, though, we're with Catherine and Grissom, and they are testing all of the consumables that Dougie had access to. So everything on that tray, anything that he could have. Yeah. And then we have a very good callback. Catherine goes, are we going to have death by chocolate again?
Oh.
Which is referring to the episode where the poker player.
Yes, who was consuming the candies.
The fake M&Ms, because they wouldn't pay M&Ms. So the fake M&Ms, and he died essentially due to toxicity from chocolate was sprayed with like mosquito poisoning.
I think the big thing is that M&M probably doesn't want its candy associated with people dying.
That's fair.
Which I only bring up because later on this episode, I'm pretty sure they like CGI a soda can or an energy drink that Greg Sanders is
about to drink.
And it's like this weird purple color that seems so out of place in the episode.
Yeah.
It's like twitch purple. And I was like, oh, they probably had something. And then they were like, we're going to get sued if we insinuate that someone's drink is unhealthy.
Yeah.
So blur it out. And they were like, we're just going to make it purple.
Yeah.
Because it's 2003 and we don't have CGI.
Exactly. So Nick and Sarah are then at the husband's house. He's not super on board with them coming inside, but then Sarah purposely sets off his car alarm.
This is like the scam from, like, they started off with this is their goal. They don't tell you this, but it's obvious.
Yeah.
To draw the attention of the neighbors.
Yeah. So he invites them in, but he's had the bathroom completely redone, except for the tub. The tub's the same tub, but everything around the tub
is
updated.
It's like, it reminds me of my wife's death, you know, except for that one place where she actually died.
Yeah. So I think we're supposed to find that strange, right? Like, we're supposed unusual. To be like, that's a little weird. But we learned that every house in the subdivision comes stock. Like, they're all set up exactly the same way.
Cookie cutter.
Like, everything is exactly the same. So Nick leaves because he's like, well, that's what, like, it's not our crime scene anymore, right? Like, it's not
That's not what the crime scene was.
It's not what the crime scene was, but they see one of the model homes is open for viewing, and so they decide to visit said model home.
And vandalize it, I assume with, you know, permission or something, I don't know.
Yeah, I was going to make mention of it. I thought the exact same thing.
They gloss over that.
Because it's like one thing to like just go in and look at it and like take measurements and, you know, like, that's fine, but no, they purposely vandalize.
And they had every intention of ripping that shower bar off the wall from day one.
We'll get there in just a moment. Right before that scene, Greg Sanders walks into Grissom's office, and this is where we learn that the poison, the migraine medication, came from one of the water bottles, one of the Anoka water bottles on stage. We are then with Nick and Sarah in the duplicative bathroom. They're trying to recreate the accident. Sarah is playing the role of the victim, and she cannot pull the bar down. Like, she is struggling. She's putting all her weight. She's, like, ripping at it. She's, like, really, really trying to rip this bar off of the wall. She cannot do it. Nick finally does, but with effort. Nick has to, like, really exert himself in order to, like, rip it off of the wall.
I actually think they needed to make Nick show a little bit more effort. I feel like he's really selling
Sarah short. Because
he's got muscles and he's a dude, so it's just, like, he had to struggle. But no, like, it really should have been almost an extra effort. I also am a little sad that they never – there's a lot of good reasons for why this would be the case, but I'm a little sad they never really, like, explain it. Because, like, there's also a lot of reasons why someone's shower bar might fail over time compared to a brand newly installed one.
Oh, for sure.
And so, like, there's a version of this story where they explain, oh, no, it's screwed into, like, a panel in the back, a solid wood structure. So it would always be hard to pull out or something.
Yeah.
Versus just being like, oh, it's in there really good. And therefore, it must be in there really good in every home. There aren't different levels of installers like across years. And hot, steamy showers and baths and water damage and stuff like that. So it's like, in a real situation, you would need a lot more proof. So I'm a little sad that they glossed over that, just because I was like, oh, in my head, I was like, oh, I bet you it's screwed into the studs or screwed into like a back plate.
Yeah.
And then I wanted them to confirm my theory, and they never did.
They did not.
Really sad because they never confirmed my theory.
They don't. I'm sorry. We're back at the comedy club. There's a female comedian on stage, and this is another.
Okay.
Spot the guest star.
Yes.
This is Maggie Wheeler, and I, as soon as I saw her, I was like, it's Janice from Friends!
Yep, Janice from Friends. I don't know that there's a more accurate reference for... Probably, and sometimes to Maggie Wheeler's chagrin, because this is actually post-Friends.
This is post-Friends.
So it's like, you know, this is her trying to have an acting career other than Janice, but she will forever be Janice.
She made Janice too iconic. She's the one who came up with the laugh, not the writers.
Yep. She's not in that many episodes of Friends, is what I learned.
She's only in 17, and it feels, or 19, and it feels like she's in so many more.
That's a great trivia question. Over or under, like, how many episodes of Friends do you think Janice is in?
Oh, actually, no. Technically, Friends was still going on, because this was air date 2003, and Friends ended in 2004, and she was in the final season of Friends. Yeah,
true, but
her main part of it was already over.
Yeah.
But she was in the final season of Friends, so... Just as someone who's seen a lot of Friends. So Catherine and Grissom are watching her. You know, they're like at the bar, they're watching her. She gets the red light, right? She gets the sign, you're bombing, get off the stage. So we shift over to Catherine and Grissom who are at the bar. They're talking to the bartender. The first comedian, Michael, is complaining about the coffee. Bartender's like, I don't care, he's gonna pay. And we learn in this exchange with the bartender that he's the one that set up the water bottles on stage for Dougie, and that they were from Dougie's stash.
So yeah, they have like this dedicated water bottle stash for him.
For him.
Even though he's only there once a year, according to the club owner.
Yeah. Yeah. We go to then a Grissom and Warwick. First Warwick sighting.
I will say, I actually thought Warwick was in the comedy club. It's somebody else. Yeah, I think I just was assuming it was going to be him the first time I was watching it.
Yeah, because you were like, oh, he's obviously in this episode. So he's finally in the episode. They have a little walk and talk. And this is, I think you made reference to it earlier, but Grissom's like, hey, you're the only one I got. there's a DB at a convenience store. So Warwick is on scene at the convenience store and he's talking to the store owner or the clerk and he's saying, hey,
this is a spot the guest star.
For me. It? Look at you.
This store owner is none other than the soup Nazi from Seinfeld.
Oh, really? It
is, the actor's name is Larry Thomas.
Okay. Okay.
And I was like so inundated with Spot the Guest Stars. I was like, the soup Nazi is in this episode?
You're like, what is happening in this episode?
I didn't know his name. I just know him as a soup Nazi. He's a very famous character. He even had the mustache in this episode. But yeah, that's my last Spot the Guest Star, which is, I think, 7 for us this episode.
Yeah.
That might be a record.
I think it is a record. I feel like 5 or 6 is the most that we've had before. So I think 7 is a record. So Warwick is talking to the soup Nazi, who evidently left soup behind and is now running a convenience store. And he says that the, you know, kid walked in. He's like going up and down the aisles. He goes down this one aisle. He drops dead. But the clerk is also saying, like, he definitely took a drink of something, like took a drink from the store and took a sip of it. And as Warwick is inspecting the shelves, because the clerk is like, yeah, he like put it down over here. It is another
a no-go
bottle. So
I like that the store owner is so like, it's shoplifting until you pay for it.
Until you pay for it. Yeah,
drink in the store. But like, he was like judging this kid was going to do it. And I guess he was. But also like, man, like of all the things to steal, water wasn't as big in 2003 as it is now. For a kid, not a soda, not a Pepsi.
No. I know.
Fortunately, went for the water bottle, paid for it with his life. And I will say, at this point, or really shortly after this, I was like, oh, I was tricked. I was like, is this going to be like a recall thing?
Yeah.
And I was convinced in that moment that there was a purposeful dichotomy between this case that we closed too soon that was really a murder and this case that we thought was a murder. And turns out it was an accident. It was going to be like an accident or something.
Okay. Yeah.
Spoiler alert, that was not what happened.
That is not what happens. No, definitely not. But I mean, it's not a bad theory. I like it. Catherine is now at the convenience store. She's on the phone. She's like, we got to pull these from all the stores. This is Tylenol tampering all over again, which is a real case. It is a real story.
I don't remember this at all, but I...
Oh, I do. I don't.
I believed him.
I don't remember it like from my own personal experience. Like, I don't remember hearing about it on the news, but I have, because I'm a true crime enjoyer, I was gonna say like connoisseur, and I was like, that feels so weird and not what I want to say.
Yeah,
but because I know a decent amount about true crime, I have heard it talked about on several like true crime podcasts and things like that, so that's I was like this is like a legit,
to be fair, story I was that they're talking negative about. 8 months old when this happened.
Okay, so I definitely wasn't alive either. Okay, good. Well, that's why I don't remember it. So Greg Sanders enters, and you kind of think for a minute that he's gonna have some like on the field time, because he wants some on the field time. And Catherine just immediately puts a bottle in his hand and is like, "Take this back to the lab." And he's like,
"Good thing you showed up. Now leave."
So he does. Jim Brass and Nick, we go back to our storyline B, are talking with Doc Robbins about Shelley and wanting to exhume her, and Doc Robbins takes this very personally.
Does not want to agree.
Does not want to agree to this. He does end up agreeing to it. So then we see some scenes of the body being exhumed and Doc Robbins is overseeing it. Before we go back to that, Greg Sanders has the results. Well, he sees the results on the bottle. This is when he goes to take a sip of that soda, the weird purpley blurred out soda, and is like, puts it back down.
I think it was supposed to be an energy drink because the thing he was keying on was caffeine.
Yes. So he tells Catherine the results that both bottles had the exact same composition of like the migraine medication and caffeine and all this sort of stuff. And I think this is when Catherine mentions the Tylenol tampering and mentions that they never caught the person who did it, which is true, but they did figure out how they tampered with them, which is like now why we have like certain safety seals.
The hardest ever to remove tops to your.
Yes.
Whoever
because
owns
it is
this
because
company.
Of, it's, because of, it's because of this instance.
Yeah, whoever owns that company that makes the little half flaps that are supposed to make it easy to remove the tampering seal.
Does not.
Why are they so bad?
I don't know.
Please tell me. I think it's the smaller they are, the worse they are. But like, I can't believe the number of times you pull on that and it just comes off, and then you need to go get like a knife or a pen or a key or something. I think it has the highest rate of failure of products in my life.
I don't know if it's the highest failure rate for me, but it's a struggle.
Yeah,
I think I've always ended up like getting them open. I have at certain point in my life had jars of things that I could not open. I literally, after trying so hard, was just like, well, I live by myself. And I did the upside down trick. I did the like running it under like hot water. I did the like every trick to try to make the bottle easier to like.
The only thing is maybe like the little milk cartons that you got as a kid that you're supposed to be able to unfold.
Oh, yeah.
That also never worked. I think they're made by the same people.
They're just out to make your life just that much level of
basically this is what happens when you try to glue plastic to cardboard in the presence of water. I don't think it works.
Yeah, it's probably not a great idea. We go to Grissom and Catherine investigating the bottles. This is where we learn the tampering method. It is in the threads of the cat.
I have a funny note here, which is they show this like not flashback, the reenactment.
Yes.
But like in that reenactment, I drink a lot of soda, so I'm very familiar. The plastic caps in your soda bottle have this like perforated ring.
Yes.
That they twist off of. And the ring is broken.
Yes.
On the water bottle.
Yeah.
When he's squeezing it. So he could have just unscrewed the cap, put it in, and screwed it back on. Because you've already broken the safety seal on your soda cap.
Well, they were testing the bottles that they knew had been tampered with.
No,
they
already were. Reenactment where they show the person doing it. The water bottle he's applying to it. And I think they did that on purpose because they wanted the threads to be showing.
To the
audience to convey. Yeah. And I went, wait a second, that bottle's already open.
Yeah, but it's already open. You wouldn't even have to do that. Yeah, you just do it right directly into the thing. But no, it's in the threads. That is where the tampering has happened. Yeah. We go back to storyline B, though. David, Doc Robbins, and Nick are with the casket. We learn that this is David's first exhumation, and he is very nervous about it.
Oh, yeah.
David, who's around dead bodies all the time, is very, very nervous about this body that was buried and now has been exhumed.
And they sent him on an errand.
They sent him on an errand to go get cold cream because they're going to have to remove the victim's makeup to do like a thorough investigation.
I love Nick's comment. You know, he's like, I don't know. She grabs you. Then
you have to hold her down. Use your other hand to hold her down. And then I did want to make note, though, I really loved the camera shot from the view in the casket. All them, yes, with all them looking down. I thought that was a great shot. I really enjoyed that. And I just wanted to point it out because I was like, that's a fun shot.
Somebody really like wanted that. It's like you could tell like whoever was shooting them. They're like, this is going to be good.
And it was good. I'm staking my claim right here. It was good. I appreciated it. We then have a newscast about the bottles, right? About the tampering. Warwick, Greg Sanders, Hodges, and
that random girl that Warwick may have been outdated
at some point in the past. Are they watching?
Never seen do any CSI work.
Yeah, and they're having like a little chit chat about it. Catherine enters. Hodges is like, "Why are you looking at me?" And she's like, "I'm not looking at you." And he's like, "Yes, you are. Like, why are you looking at me?" But what's more important in this scene is that the poison that Greg Sanders detected in the bottle was actually backwash because it was from the threads. And then when they took a sip and then they like put the bottle back down. And now they have to check the cap.
Which they don't.
40,000 bottles to see if any other ones have been tampered with.
Which they don't bring this up, but that means there's so much more of that on the bottle.
Yes.
Than they may have thought. Like that person was ingesting so much more.
Yes.
Because like they were like, there's enough to kill this person in this water that is diluted backwash.
Yes. Yeah. Yeah. So the killer meant serious business. Grissom is then looking at the two tainted, you know, the ones that they know for sure have been tainted. Then he's looking at their serial number, which brings him to walk into where Warwick is, and he wants like the lot numbers from the store. They don't match the, you know, the serial code from the two bottles. It does match from the comedy club, though. So the comedy club is the source of the bottles.
So I get why they're doing this now for story reasons. Wouldn't have been like one of the first things they did. They would have had to have told the water company. They would have had to like, you know, told, like, looked for these lot numbers and compared them.
Yeah, like already. We've had a lot of food recalls lately, right? A lot of, and when those happen, a lot of times they will tell you, like, look to see if your bag of this is from lot blah blah blah, because that is the lot that we've identified was contaminated, right? Like, that's like how we know.
That's why, like, we do it.
It's why we do it, is so we can, like, narrow that down. So, yeah, I mean, it's all for storyline that they wait until this point. So this prompts Grissom to think that it's not random product tampering, that it was purposeful,
yes,
but made to look like random product tampering to cover up an actual murder.
Which also made me realize, this is how you know the person who did this is not a professional, because you didn't have to, like, poison one of the same bottles and bring it to the store.
No, you could have just went to the store,
With your poison and just, like, doped up a bottle.
Yep.
But again, it's not, we're not talking about a person who is an expert in CSI here.
This is very true. So we're back with Doc Robbins and Nick. They are washing the body, and this is where we learn that, like, subtle bruising might not be evident at the time of, like, an autopsy, right? It hasn't had time to settle and show.
Yeah.
So, you know, she has some bruising on her back. They're like, all right, that's kind of normal. And they turn her over, they remove her makeup, and she has an obvious bruise of a handprint on her face.
Yeah. Over, like, her mouth.
Like, over her mouth. Well, you can't really see the part over her mouth at first. You see more of, like, the fingers over one side of the face,
yeah, and then
like that, and the thumb and things like that, but when you look at it, you're like, wow, that's a handprint.
I think there was another one around her neck.
There might as well.
I don't think they didn't spend as much time on it, but I think it was in the wide shot.
Okay. So we'll come back to this, Bruce. Before we do, we have a Greg Sanders, Catherine, and Grissom walk and talk. And they're trying to figure out how did the caffeine, because it's, like, non-caffeinated water, right? Like, this is just, like, spring water. So, like, how did caffeine end up as part of this concoction?
Yeah.
And
it, not that caffeine, I mean, technically it's naturally occurring, but it's only in a few places.
Yes. And Greg Sanders posits that the medication is, like, a tablet, so it would have to be, like, ground down to, like, mixed into a liquid to be able to be, like, dropped. And so he's like, maybe someone used a coffee grinder, and thus caffeine got mixed into the solution because the person used a coffee grinder to create the liquid.
And this, you know, this is, I think, an important, a super important part of the rest of figuring out the story. But I also was, like, super confused at the end, because it's, they go down this coffee, like, oh, this person must have drank coffee, but maybe we'll talk about it when there's a scene later where they collect a coffee grinder.
That's literally the next scene.
Okay. Yeah.
Grissom is with the owner of the comedy club. He's collecting their coffee maker. This is where he also sees the last picture of Dougie, but Grissom notices that the red light is on, like, the get off the stage light is on. And they're like, that's weird. So Grissom goes over to the switch that controls said red light, and there is blood underneath it.
So can I ask a question? Do they ever test this coffee grinder?
Yes. We'll get there.
Okay. Because that's what I thought. And then I was like, maybe I was confused, because when we get there, I have a major pet peeve.
Okay. So before we get there, Catherine goes to collect DNA to find out whose blood it is on the light switch that flipped on the red light. Gilbert needs a lot of foreplay. Gilbert is a naughty, naughty boy in this episode.
Well, he doesn't have a career, right?
Poor Gilbert. So he's not the guilty party, though. Instead, the bartender cops to
Fesses.
He's like, yeah, I did it. Like, I was just messing with him. Like, I was just trying to, like, rattle him. Like, it was no big deal.
This is, like, the most literal red herring in the episode.
Yes, it is literally a red herring. A red bloody herring. So we're not back to the coffee maker results yet. Now we're with Jim Brass and Nick. They're with the husband and the husband's lawyer. And Jim Brass is saying, You know what, really solidified that, like, you murdered your wife is that you talked about her in the past tense. And I will admit, I don't know why. I think about this, like, pretty regularly. Like, I remember this line from CSI fairly regularly. I don't know why. This is just, like, one of those lines in this show that is just, like, I've just been like, huh. Like, anytime I'm like, you know, I'll watch, like, the first 48. And when people are talking, I'm like, are they talking in the past tense? Are they talking in the present tense?
I'm pretty sure that's a real thing, by the way.
I think it is a real thing. I think I looked into it at some point to be like, is this a real thing? And come to find out, it is. Like, it's not, like, obviously it's, like, not going to hold up in a court of law. But studies have shown that in the immediate aftermath, you know, of you losing someone, you're going to, like, refer to them in the present tense because, like, it hasn't, the reality that they are no longer, that it is a past tense now,
but also,
has not set in. And you don't want to admit it, and you don't want to, like...
And you've never talked about them in the past tense
before. So it's just, like, not what you default to in normal conversation. But they also...
Imagine if you're like, oh, if I was just like, oh, yeah, my friend Raven was really nice.
Yeah, and I'd be like, what?
What happened to her?
When did I become not nice?
What happened to her? What did she do? It's like, yeah, no, we always think about people in the present tense.
Yeah, but they have additional evidence to show, not just past tense.
Yes.
They show the pictures of the bruise of the hand mark over the face, but...
And he's left-handed.
And he's left-handed.
And it was a left-handed hand.
It was a left-handed hand on the thing. But he's able to walk out, at least for now. But his car is getting towed because they might not be able to criminally charge him right now, but civil charges can be brought on by the insurance company, so they want their money back.
I'm surprised the insurance company took this long to take his car. I mean, maybe for comedic effect, but...
Yeah, I think it's for comedic effect.
I was like, the moment they exhumed that body...
Yeah, they should have been like, whoop!
The bat signal went up with the insurance company. We can get money back?
Yeah, insurance is like, we don't have to pay out? What? Like, give us our money back.
It's the name of our business.
So, that is the end of storyline B. Is Nick essentially saying, yeah, like, we can't charge you criminally right now, but, like, we're not done investigating, so, like, at least wallow in the fact that you don't have your money anymore.
Yeah, it's like this case, like, they imply that, like, we're gonna try to reopen the case.
Yeah. So we're then with, oh, this is where we learn about the coffee. Greg Sanders is with Grissom, the coffee maker at the club. That coffee does not match the composition of the coffee found in the poison syrup.
The cheap, okay, was the coffee grinder from the bar?
Yes.
I thought it was from the green room. This is where I kept getting really tripped up. That makes more sense. Yeah. Because I was thinking, like, if this is a communal, I guess the thing, and I guess it doesn't matter because it doesn't match. The thing that kept tripping me up is I thought they were like, oh, this coffee grinder in a communal place has traces of the drug, so we just got to figure out who else is grinding coffee beans in it.
Yeah.
And as if that would be the only person who could have used it.
Yeah.
What they're saying is it was the grinder from the club. So it's a grinder somebody must own.
Yes.
Because they're a coffee aficionado.
Yes.
Okay.
And so
that makes so much more sense.
So Greg Sanders went the extra step and, like, broke down the composition of the coffee in the mixture, and it is, and this is a real story, this is a real thing, it is a Kopi Luwak coffee, and this is a real thing, listeners. If you didn't know this, I dated someone for a while that was all about, I mean, I knew about this anyway, but then I dated someone that was like, coffee was their, like, hyper focus for life, and so I learned way more about coffee than I ever needed to learn about coffee, and we did talk about this coffee. So this is essentially, there's like a cat-like creature that eats the coffee beans and then poops them out, and then that is harvested, and that is made into, like, essentially the world's most expensive coffee is this Kopi Luwak. And so that is the coffee. So Greg Sanders is like, if you can find out who drinks Kopi Luwak, then probably have your killer. Yeah. So
I've always heard that as, like, a civets or something. I've heard he refers to it as something else. Like, there, it's a primate.
It might be a civic might be right.
But no, that, yeah. So he calls it something else.
Luwak.
No. He calls the, like, a, he refers to the animal as, like, a type of animal. And I was like, oh.
He said a cat-like creature. No, yeah. The Luwak is the creature.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, he calls it, that's what it is. He calls it a cat-like creature.
Yeah.
But I think it's technically a civet, so.
Yeah.
But so. I guess, I don't know, civets, cats, probably.
Yeah.
I don't think they're making that part up.
I'm gonna hear my keystrokes guy.
No, they look like rats and cats at the same time.
They're so cute. I know what they look like, and I'm like, they're super adorable.
It's poop coffee.
Yeah, just telling me about the type of coffee. It's not telling me about the creature. Also known as civet. Yeah, also known as civet coffee. So it's a civet. Yeah, the Asian palm civet.
There you go.
Is the civet that, it's so cute.
Indonesia, Sumatra, Java.
As Bali. Nick knows, even though they could send him into like anaphylactic shock, I foster rats and mice. And so I have a soft spot for like rodent-y looking creatures.
Yeah, I don't, that's what I said. I'm curious if they're, I was trying to figure out if they're, I don't know if civets are cats or rodents.
I don't know what they are, to be fair. I don't know what their classification is. Civet.
I was like, but it seems like they're cats maybe.
It's a nocturnal mammal.
They're part of the Viverridae, which are like muskrats. That looks like a bittering. Yeah. So I think I would be safe.
I think, yeah, you'd probably say safe. I mean, I can't foster them because they're not legal pets. I only foster legal pets. So we learn this information about this specific type of coffee. We go back to the comedy club. Michael is doing a set and he was already angry. He's been angry throughout this entire episode, but he is like especially angry during the set. And he's talking about how our country is like a bashing nation. And then he like threatens to pee on Vin Diesel's head, which is like, there's a bald man in the audience. Yeah. So he calls him Vin Diesel.
I was like, was Vin Diesel that popular back then? I guess so.
I think he was. This was like when Fast and the Furious. Yeah, I think so. And the crowd at this point is actually laughing because he is making fun of them. And then he's like getting upset that it's like only lowbrow humor that they're finding entertaining. And he's like, oh, okay. So I guess the only way I could get you to stop laughing at this point is if I like went and slit all of your throats. And you're like, whoa.
Went a little far there.
So he starts walking off the stage. He's like walking towards Grissom, who is there along with police officers to arrest him. And he admits to killing Dougie. He killed him because he despised everything he stood for, and he thinks that people should praise him for killing him. And he is sad that the boy died, right? Like
that he killed someone else.
That he killed him, even though what else did you think was going to happen? But I think it was more so that it was like a kid that bothered him. Like not necessarily, like I think he knew somebody else was going to die, but I think it did bother him that it was a kid. And they arrest him, and that is the end of today's episode.
Yeah, they don't explain how they know that he's the murderer, whether they're to arrest him.
It's the other coffee. Than he,
but they never like did that part. They never did the part where they figured out who was the coffee. Just showed up, and he was drinking some coffee on stage, and he doesn't like the coffee that's there. But like, they never got a warrant to see.
Well, maybe
checked his credit card statement. You know what I mean? Like, usually where it goes. But you know, obviously, once he gives a monologue, like.
Yeah, once he admits to killing him.
I also didn't get the last line. I didn't know what the joke was supposed to be.
I don't get what the joke was supposed to be either. Yeah, he says like a joke, quote unquote, to Grissom. Essentially, he says like, oh, I only killed the boy because like you didn't get me first.
Yeah.
And then he's like, oh, I didn't think you would get the joke. And Grissom's like, no, I did. I just didn't think it was funny. And I was like, well, I don't get it. Like, I was like, can someone explain the joke to me? I don't get it. What's the joke?
Someone write in and explain this to us.
Or just like an alpha male joke, like they say something like crude or like rude, and then when you're like,
I don't think he's the alpha male type.
No, I know he's not. He's like the anti alpha male type. I know. That's why I didn't. I was like,
And certainly Grissom isn't.
No, not our Grissom. So yeah, that's the end of the episode. So Nick, what did you think about today's episode?
I like the episode. It was good on a rewatch. It was interesting, fun little things. I found myself struggling, but then settling on a 4 out of 5 because I just felt like I was appreciating a lot of the little things we sort of talked about last time with the camaraderie in the episode.
Yes,
and it just like it did a lot of things well. It didn't have any black marks, and there wasn't anything I disliked about the episode. So I was like, yeah, this is solid. Like this is, I would take this every week. And
so. I think I give it a 3.5. I enjoyed it. I think I did like last week's episode a little bit more. But I will note that as I was watching it and there was like set conclusions to things, I was like, Nick is going to feel so much better this episode. Yeah. Like,
yeah, I mean,
like closure. Storyline B, he's not arrested, but we know that there's civil charges going up against him, and we know that they're going to continue investigating him. So it's like, okay, closure there, and then there's like set closure in storyline A. So I was like, Nick's gonna feel so much. I didn't think that, but I will say that I don't think I liked this episode when I was watching CSI originally, and so when I came back to this episode, like when I saw that this was going to be this episode, I was like, oh, like this is going to be so, like, I'm not going to like this episode. And I will say that I was pleasantly surprised that I enjoyed this episode. I was like, oh okay. I guess like with age, I've come to appreciate this episode. I thought it was a decent episode.
I didn't know if I was going to like it on the second watch through. I thought maybe I wouldn't, and I did. Yeah. I was surprised.
Again, this has, I think I've mentioned this like a few times this season. This has like, this passes like the CSI vibe check. Like it's a little raunchy. It's a little like off center. It's a little campy, but it's still serious. You know, like, I don't know. And there's good camaraderie. And so, yeah, I said 3.5. I think I didn't mind the rewatch. I don't think you need to rewatch this episode. So I would say probably just leave it as a watch, even though the rewatch wasn't like a painful rewatch by any stretch. But I don't know if there's like much that you learn or gather.
Nothing learned, but there's a couple of little things you realize. Oh, okay. Yeah. Yeah. They set that up or they did that.
Yeah.
I was kind of, there are just a few of them, but enough.
Yeah. No, that's totally fair. So yeah, 3.5, give it a watch. Solid episode. I do think I liked last week's episode a little bit more, which is why this is a 3.5 and last week was a 4, but we'll see what our ratings are for next week when we come back to review season 3, episode 21, Forever. But in the meantime, you can support us on Patreon by first searching for Who Are You? / CSI Podcast. You can find us on Facebook the same way. We're also on Blue Sky at Who Are You? CSI Pod. We're also on Instagram. Same name. Who Are You? CSI Pod. Also, technically still Twitter/X, but we'll see how much longer. And we also have a website. Who Are You? CSI Pod.
.com.
But otherwise, we will talk to you next week.
No spoilers.
No spoilers.